Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Welcome to this week's episode of the Motormouth podcast, where I chatted with Jack Withenshaw, one of the founders of Airspeeder. He's created a flying car, well, several of them in fact, that will race at 150 kilometers per hour in the sky above our heads in stunning locations on augmented reality courses against loads of other flying cars. They look like a sort of cross between an F1 car, a fighter jet, and a drone. And the next generation car they're building will be the first one to be controlled by an onboard pilot, probably tested by Bruno Senna, who's involved with the business. They've got some amazing plans, and the future is apparently navigated not on the road, but in the sky. Our average road car will become not one on four wheels, but on four propellers. We'll all be doing the school run at 8,000 feet, avoiding each other with amazing crash detection technology and rappel systems. He's a visionary, highly intelligent, and articulate. He's secured big backing and is changing the game one flight at a time. I really hope you enjoy this one. Let's head over to hear from Jack. Hi, Jack. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Before we come on to Airspeeder itself, I want to find out a little bit more about you and how you came to end up at this point. Let's go back a bit. How does a graduate from Sydney University end up in London launching a flying race car series? What led you to this point?
I would like to say there was a master plan here to follow to enter the world of flying cars, but no, it's just been a case of just following my feet, really. I guess on a personal level, born in the UK, raised in Australia, went to Sydney Uni, did history and philosophy, so the natural ingredients for flying car racing, moved into media, and then kind of carved a career out in media, sales and technology. But the story of Airspeeder really comes into a relationship or a friendship I've had with Matt Pearson, my co-founder. And I've known Matt for a whole number of years, but we kind of started this journey about, well, I'd say 12 years ago in the hinterlands of Mongolia up in the Siberian borders. We spent 10 days on horseback riding around in Mongolia, severely underprepared for that trip. The tent was not prepared for freezing temperatures. We packed about half as much food as we needed. So we were cold, starving, and in that kind of environment, Matt was talking about one day wanting to build giant drones. And the idea of giant drones wasn't new. It was something we've always had since the Jetsons, since Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Back to the Future. But what was different was Matt's take on how do we bring this idea to life. And that's what really caught me. Maybe it was because I was nutritionally deprived and starving. But he did say one truth, which has stuck with me since then, which is that every mobility revolution has always had racing as the first accelerator, first use case, first adoption of that new technology. And it wouldn't be any different for flying cars. And so he planted the seed somewhere in the Siberian borders. And I carried that through to me, with me, sorry. And when I came to London, He said, look, I think it's time we take a good crack at this. And so since then, we raised our first bit of VC money. I brought my skill set of advertising, my background in advertising to take this to partners. And collectively, we've started building out the vehicles, the team, and now the sport.
I'm always interested in how people, you know, that you've outlined that transition from working in advertising or whatever you were doing at the time, your trip to Mongolia, and then you meet some VCs, you raise some money, you start a business. It's obviously not that straightforward. How are you coping at the point where you've presumably left your full-time employment to go and find and focus on this funding? Or was it sort of still working, trying to raise some money, then hand in my notice, then start a business? How was that process?
So I had a background in startups before, and the thing that startups do fantastically is they take over your life and they completely fuel you with passion. And once you've had a little snip or a taste of that, it's hard to get rid of. And I've jumped in from big corporate to startups and back into big corporate again. And so Airspeeder did that for me really quickly, even though it was just in 2019, it was really just a small idea. And it was the idea of we can actually do this. And there's obviously a little bit of risk in going out and moving away from your steady 9-to-5 and the regular salary. But think about the reward and think about what we can be creating here. And just shaking that image off is so hard to do. And I knew that that the passion that startups give you is really the foundation of the ingredient to be able to go out and do this. If you've got that and the drive and the tenacity, then anything's possible to at least give it a go. So what we did was we said, let's start small. Let's create subscale vehicles. So these were the Mark IIs back then. They were 3/4 scale. They were about 3.5 meter, 150 kilo unmanned vehicles. Using that, we put on demonstration at Goodwood Festival of Speed, which went spectacularly badly. We infamously crashed. But from that, we took a bunch of different lessons. Firstly, safety. We had to massively upskill the employees, the safety handbooks, the vehicles. We put the Mark II to rest, not to bring it out again. But we also learned how to help manage and run events, how to bring partners on. We knew there was an audience for this sport. And there was some really interesting data there that said that this, although it went badly, could become something. And that was enough for us to be able to take out. So to answer your question, I think the leap of faith was all about passion that I could not ignore nor deny. It wasn't as strategic as if I do this by then, I've got the capital to be able to do it. It was just jumping off the cliff. And then looking at the data to see if in the small steps, even at a small scale MVP, can this be done? And the answer to that was yes. So that was enough for me to be able to say, all right, let's commit to this.
And you've got some fairly impressive people now involved with the business. I saw on your website, I don't know how you say his surname. Is it Geisen? Geisen? Gary?
Geisen. Yeah, Gary Geisen.
Geisen. So he's joined you as part of your board. I looked at his profile, which is seriously impressive. He's raised big money before. He's been involved with this kind of business before. So now you're getting important people around you. Does it really feel like you're starting to get traction with this now? And this is, you know, a fully fledged business, still a startup, okay, but you're really starting to make some inroads.
Oh, I think so. It's a bit of a pinch me moment when we have people like Gary Geisen join the board. For listeners out there, Gary is the ex-CEO of Wisk. Wisk is now a completely Boeing-backed entity and is one of the largest eVTOL companies, electric vertical takeoff and landing companies. Out there in the world, and we're absolutely honoured to have Gary by our side and guiding us through this period. But then the stable goes beyond having just Gary Geisen. We've got names like Judith Griggs, who's the ex-CEO of Formula One Australia and Formula One as well. Eddie Baker, who famously, if anyone knows the origins of TV broadcasts at Formula One, known as Bakerville. Eddie Baker is the man behind that and helped set that up and is coming to help guide that at Airspeeder for us as well. The last two being Adelaide locals. It's amazing to have a little collection of motorsport, leadership down in Adelaide. And so as half our business is based in South Australia, we're lucky to be able to capture some of that local talent.
And the vehicle itself, so it's called the Speeder, right? Is that how you refer to them?
Yeah, Speeder, Air Speeder, you can call it what you want. It's technically called an eVTOL,
right,
which is Electric Vertical Takeoff and Landing Vehicle. That is a unsexy name. It's just not what we envisioned as kids growing up. I don't think, if you said to any kid in the road, just say, hey, do you know what an eVTOL is? Nah, they have no idea. And you go, do you know what a flying car is? Yes, I get the idea of what a flying car is. And so flying cars, technically inaccurate. eVTOL is too accurate. So we like to say Speeder or Air Speeder is what we call these vehicles.
Yeah, and they look really cool. I mean, they're very sleek. They have four props, a cockpit towards the back of the Speeder. Are they modeled on anything in particular? Did you take sort of inspiration? Like there's a company called, what's the name of it? Aptera, who are sort of reinventing the way cars are designed. They're very, very different. If you ever look at an Aptera car, it's sort of like shark-like in a way. Where did you get your inspiration for the form factor? Because obviously we've got drones and everyone sees those flying about. You know, there's obviously a resemblance. But was there a particular inspiration that you took?
Yeah, I think there's a correlation in the design profiles of the vehicles and the maturity of the company, which is really interesting. So that shark figure, that cigar racer with the pilot at the back is the Mark III, and that was our first major iteration into full-size vehicles. Now, the design for that was really about image and trying to personify a vehicle where people could associate with being a flying car and cutting edge, but also timeless and having origins and DNA based in motorsport, just as you've seen from, the cigar races in the 30s, the 40s. And it needs to be both. It needs to be accessible for people to understand that this is both a flying car and a racing vehicle at the same time. The shark mouth is a beautiful entity. And the Mark III is absolutely, what we believe, is one of the most beautiful eVTOLs out there. It was our first vehicle that first full-size vehicle we started flying. Now, since then, we've done 300 test flights with the Mark III. It's an uncrewed 4.5 meter long electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicle. It's light. It is only about 150 to less than 200 kg. It can go top speed of about 150 kilometers per hour and has competed in two of our first MVP races that we did last year. Now, that's the uncrewed vehicle. We then have taken some of the learnings from that vehicle into the crewed vehicle, the Mark IV, which is the next one, which is the one behind me here.
Right. Okay.
And that vehicle is designed to be crewed and therefore requires a safety cell around it to be able to keep the pilot safe. So the same carbon fiber monocoque that we see on Formula 8 racing, we've transported into the air to be able to keep the pilot safe. Other elements that we've included then are a significant upgrade to the powertrain to be able to allow for the weight. We've had to include additional wings. As you can see from the Mark III, there's not much of a wing profile on that, so we have to help some of that lift profile by including the winglets. And then some dynamic tilt rotors, which is the next part that we'll be bringing onto the Mark IV.
Yeah, for those that can't see this, the picture behind you is a top-down image. And from what I can see there, it's sort of like a cross between a Formula One car and a fighter jet. It's got a rear wing like an F1 car. It's got a front wing like an F1 car, but it's got wings like a fighter jet. And then obviously the props, the sort of drone-like aspect to it. It's sort of a bit of a hybrid, isn't it?
Yeah, a beautiful bastard child of these two worlds. Yeah. But it's... I don't know. I would love to say who said the quote, but typically when things go fast, they tend to conform on a similar shape.
Yeah.
And this thing does naturally take some of those elements from both motorsports and from aerospace. But that's really where we're shooting for. This is a motorsport and just happens to be in the air, so we'll be taking the best of both worlds.
And with it being a motorsport, you've done your unmanned two vehicle race, so presumably in years to come we're going to be seeing 20 of these things lining up in the sky battling against each other in what, augmented reality tracks or something like that?
Exactly like that. Yeah. So that's one of the key pieces of technology we started working on for 2022. We built the vehicle in 2021 and went through its testing, but we realized that it wasn't just about the vehicle. It was about how do we keep these vehicles communicating with each other and with the track. And that was another whole set of sub-problems we had to solve. So we went out and we took a whole bunch of different technological partners to come on and help us in that challenge. So for the augmented reality systems, Telstra Purple, part of Australia's biggest telco, Telstra, came and helped us build a system from scratch so that the pilots could see the gates as they were racing. So the gates don't actually exist in real life. It's all digital. But the pilots can have the same posts to be able to race past. And that technology for augmented reality racing allows us then to be able to race in any environment, not just on tracks. We can race in snow, grass, around mountains, over water. The sky becomes our playground. And we are able to create these digital tracks, have no impact on the environment, constantly change the locations and keep this sport fresh. I guess while that's exciting for the sport, it's even more exciting for UAM or urban air mobility. So this new mobility revolution in which flying cars are starting to come to life. And you can just think that if we're going to have these passageways through cities in the sky, they're also going to have to require these same types of technologies. And that's what Airspeed is about. It's about turbocharging the vehicles. It's about allowing a gateway for teams to be able to invest in technology and develop technology, just like they did 120 years ago at the birth of the automotive era. But it's also about cities and future cities starting to get, and technology companies starting to get hands-on, actual real-world experience on multiple flying vehicles, but just happens to be in a contained and benign environment that is racing.
And there's obviously a massive safety element to this. And people listening are probably thinking, well, you know, airborne vehicles flying 150 kilometers an hour against 20 other airborne vehicles around an augmented reality track, that's chaos. Yeah, that's going to be bedlam. How on earth do you stop horrific accidents happening every 5 minutes?
Yeah, as I said at the beginning, I think safety is probably the biggest factor we think about in the growth of this company and the sport. So we produce the EXA series, EXA, which stands for External Aviator. And the EXA series is an uncrewed series, so the parts are racing these remotely. And all the learnings that we take from that allows us to train pilots, debug the system, and for us to kind of get familiar with the ins and outs of racing before putting in the riskiest element, which is the pilot themselves. So we're now at the stage where we're moving into crewed testing for the new vehicle. So safety of the pilot is the first and foremost. So I've talked about the safety cell. If these things crash, and in motorsports, crashing does happen, is that the pilot will be safe. And creating a quite heavy but quite safe safety cell is really the centerpiece of these vehicles. And that's a really interesting point, I think, because traditional aerospace doesn't think about crashing in the same way. Aerospace has an approach to crashing, which is don't crash, never ever crash. 10 to the minus 9 is the acceptable risk for crashing, which pretty much means you can't ever crash. But if it does happen, it's usually not good. What we're building are vehicles that are designed to crash. And if they do crash, the pilot can be safe, but with a performance body built around that. And it's a very different mindset in terms of how we are approaching both racing and flying cars. So that's the vehicle. Kind of zooming out, we've also got things like collision avoidance or close collision avoidance. Because we're in a closed track, our vehicles can communicate to each other. And we're talking within a 30 centimeter buffer zone. So the two vehicles can get really close to each other, almost like a force field. That if vehicle A comes in and it's about to collide with vehicle B will be nudged out the side. Now there'll be a penalty for the pilot that's decided to take that course of action. We can also remotely slow down the vehicles as well. We can apply digital gravel so that they can be penalized for that movement. But this is what you are able to do with vehicles that aren't on the ground. They have the full 3D space of access. I think there's about 20, 30 sensors governing the radar and the LiDAR for the vehicle-to-vehicle communication. which we have complete control over. So there is an element here where we're in a benign, remote location and have full control on the vehicles that are competing against each other. And again, that's the type of technology that Airspeeder allows to be tested that we'll see in the mainstream world.
Now, there's a huge amount of engineering and advanced technology that goes into these things. And I know that there are other companies and brands trying to do similar things, not necessarily in racing, but it could be in military or logistics or just travel in you know, future cities in the sky. And there's obviously, this sort of feels like it slots quite nicely into certain wheelhouses of the likes of Elon Musk or Bill Gates, or, you know, somebody with bottomless pits of cash who enjoys this kind of groundbreaking evolution. Is that a concern for you?
Yeah, so this industry, urban air mobility or advanced air mobility, is absolutely booming right now. There's 250 plus flying car companies out there. Not many people know that. It's tipped to be a $1 trillion industry by 2040. It's predominantly led by flying taxis and logistics drones. Now, flying taxis are big vehicles that can carry, say, 4, 5, 6 passengers. They'll be fully electric. They'll be quiet. They'll have distributed propulsion, so multiple rotors, not a single rotor. But it takes time to be able to build a vehicle that can fly over our cities in the next 4 or 5 years. Now, I guess being a student of history, I look to the past to see how other mobility revolutions have been formed. And 120 years ago, racing was one of the first applications for the car, for the auto era. It was a time where there were no petrol pumps, there were no driver's licenses. These things were noisy and unknown, and people needed to start becoming familiar with them, and motorsports did that. Now, that's an environment that's very similar to right now, where this technology is starting to come through, but it needs an application for the public to engage with it and for technology to be tested. And so we see motorsports as the first application for this new industry that's coming forward. We see it as a great testbed for some of that technology to be able to be developed, just like it was 120 years ago, to trickle down to the mainstream market. In terms of what's next for it, Airspeeder and I guess our manufacturer behind us, which is Alauda Aeronautics, it's bigger than just racing. We see a world of private eVTOL, private mobility starting to come through as well, starting with the racetrack and racetrack experiences, and possibly even a roadmap into a world of owning our own flying car. And that's the vision.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I think we all fell in love with in science fiction and in these movies like Star Wars, Back to the Future, Chitty Bang Bang. We wanted the idea of we can hop into our own flying vehicle. We love that. We love that feeling of agency and autonomy, that we can go where we want. But again, it starts with safely testing this out, raising awareness, getting the public excited and falling in love with this technology through racing firstly.
Yeah, I mean, you can totally buy into the idea of, you know, going out in the morning, jumping in your flying car with the kids, dropping them off at school, you know, going and do the grocery shopping. You can sort of imagine that sort of Jetsons kind of future. But for now, you're focused in on racing. And my background is sponsorship in Formula One. So I'm always fascinated by how these things get funded by, you know, different partners. I was looking at your partners on your website. You've got IWC, a brilliant watch company. You've got Intel, you know, one of the biggest companies in the world. You've got Acronis. These are big brands. Was it a hard sell to them, or are they kind of open to these kind of ideas?
Well, they're definitely open. But when it comes to pitching in flying car racing, you get one or two responses. You get one which says, that is absolutely bonkers. And then you get another which says, that's absolutely bonkers. Tell me more. And they're the kind of forward-thinking, progressive brands that we like to be able to work with, the ones that can see beyond the horizon of today into tomorrow. And in that world is the opportunity for a lot of these brands as well. So we're working with a whole bunch of different partners. I've mentioned a couple there. We've also worked with AWS and Telstra. And the reason these top-tier technology companies are working with Airspeeda is, yes, it's a big vision and a big journey and it's exciting. There's also a new world of urban air mobility and advanced air mobility that Airspeeda is starting to test 10 years before the mainstream market, allowing any of the partners that work with us that advantage into that space. So there is I guess from a sponsorship side, or at least a commercial side, yes, the journey's exciting and doors quickly get closed on you. But there is a real technological reason and cut through for these companies to be able to benefit from working with Airspeeda.
And there are other quite revolutionary forms of racing popping up all the time at the moment. We've obviously had Extreme E. We've got the E1 boat racing series, which is coming online soon, run by Roddy Basso. And they've got some really impressive team owners, you know, proper A-listers that are starting to take an interest in this sort of thing. Who are going to be the people that are owning and running your teams, and who's going to pilot these things?
That's a really good question when it comes to team ownership, because I think the nature of team ownership in motorsports is kind of taking a bit of a shift into these big names, names that have large audience bases that can quickly attribute a lot of value to that team slot. We go a different direction. It comes down to why we've created Airspeeda. And Airspeeda is built to be able to turbocharge this new industry. Now, that industry relies on the investment of OEMs, of technology providers. And big names, while great in terms of allowing audience size and great for sponsorship and raising awareness of the sport, won't be able to provide that technological input that at the level that we need it. So we are really taking a look at the books of the likes of Formula One and saying, these are big OEMs that are investing sizable sums to be able to get advantage in their market through racing. And that's the type of investment that we need for to make a meaningful impact in this mobility revolution. So the teams that we're talking to aren't celebrity owners. They are OEMs. They are automotive companies, specifically not aerospace. So they're automotive companies that have either already announced their vertical ambitions or are about to announce their vertical ambitions that also have a motorsport legacy, either in Formula One or otherwise.
Interesting.
And that's the type of teams that will invest in the technology, that the types of teams that allow audiences nationally to rally behind them, to get the awareness where we need it. And they're the types of teams that have done this before. These are I can't say who the names are, but they are the same names that we saw 120 years ago at the dawn of the automotive era, just doing exactly what they're doing again, but now in the vertical space. And so that's the direction Airspeeda is headed.
It's very cool. I look forward to seeing a papaya McLaren Airspeeda burning it around some augmented reality track in the future. In terms of watching it, so from a live spectator angle, so you've got these augmented reality courses in the sky, so I guess you're thinking big screens with that augmented reality projected onto it, so you can see the route the pilots are taking whilst watching them live in the sky above your heads.
Exactly. So we're We're a sport that likes to race in remote locations, beautiful but remote locations, with small amounts of VIPs on site initially. But that's a safety consideration. So we're really going to make sure we have those small guests, small amounts of guests safely secure for the race. But we want to expand this to a sport for everybody. And in a couple of years, we'd like to be able to be racing in the Bay of Monaco. Over the water would be fantastic, where all the guests will be able to see from the sidelines. So to be able to do that, we have to use some pretty clever technology. So augmented reality for the pilots to be able to see the gates is one thing, but then be able to take that as an experience so you can see it on screens. That's something we're doing this year with our VIPs for our races. And then the next few years is to take that experience from seeing it on screens into, well, how do you create a completely immersive sport for those guests, if that's through a phone or a headset or a device like that, so you can see the actual race outline. In terms of our courses, usually a blend of digital and physical. So we've got some great plans in the mix to be able to look down from a heightened perspective into a valley of sorts and being able to see the race below you, where we use the physical landscape to be able to guide the racetrack, which is hugely exciting as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've got these sort of visions of Airspeeder supporting a Formula One race in Monaco, you know, same race weekend, it was drones flying all over the place, filming down onto this race in the sky. You can sort of start to envisage where it's going, can't you?
Well, yeah, you've just said it really, when you've got the film drones also in the mix. It's a complex cacophony of different vehicles all intermingling. Our head of operations calls it an aerial ballet, but you've got the speeders themselves racing around, trying not to hit each other, trying to compete for lines. Then you've also got film drones coming in and out of the sport. So at a 2-to-1 ratio of the film drones in the mix, in terms of the cameras and the vehicles, it's the same number of cameras as a Formula One car. You've got some incredible broadcast footage that's going to start to come through for that audience as well.
Yeah.
Whether we're going to race on a track, the same track as a Formula One race in the future, I'd love to be able to get there one day. That'd be awesome. But for the moment, we're doing remote location racing. Yeah. And then I guess in the far, far future, maybe Formula One might be able to feature at one of our races.
It's got Codemasters, EA Sports written all over it, isn't it? I mean, this is proper gaming material as well.
Well, we've already started to delve into that world. So our partners, Saltwater Games, have just produced their first iteration of an Airspeeder tournament within their game called Celeros. And definitely check it out. Have a look online. You've got names like Bruno Senna racing in that tournament. Now, Bruno is one of our pilots as well, racing in the Airspeeder Exa series, so it's got a bit of a unique advantage in that. But you're totally right. When you've got the names like Wipeout starting to come through, F-Zero.
Yeah,
these are all bangers. And we're just doing it in real life. And through gaming, we'll be allowing kind of different audiences to interact with this. But then that starts also raise the question of, where does our talent come from? Where do our pilots come from? And we believe gaming's a really good fertile ground to be able to get some talent through to this sport. It's not set in stone that the pathway for pilots isn't as traditional as kart racing through your Formula Series and into Formula One. We can diversify that through gaming to see some of the skills and subsets and qualities in pilots that we want. So, yeah, a lot of our existing pilots have come from that world as well. Zefitali Walsh, our current champion, is a drone racing champion himself, so more on the digital side than actually a physical drone racer. So it's good to see some of the skill sets coming through.
And how are they actually powered? I mean, is there when you're racing, is it going to be like the first season of Formula E, where you had to leap from one car to the other when you run out of energy? Like, you know, a typical drone that's, you know, people use in their homes only lasts for what, 20-25 minutes. You know, how long are these things actually going to be airborne for?
So at the moment, the Mark III's have about 15 minutes before they need to come in for a pit stop. And we've got the team's got it down to about a minute to be able to take the batteries out and put the new ones in and get them back out onto the grid. Now, 15 minutes isn't long enough, and for the crewed vehicles, it's definitely not going to be powerful enough. So we've started experimenting with sustainable fuels, so sustainable aviation fuels, injecting to a turbo generator, powering through to an electric powertrain, the mix of kind of high-density fuels, sustainable, but also electric propulsion is a good mix for the industry and a good mix for the sport itself as well. You've also brought up a really interesting point about what type of series we are. So at the moment, we've got two entities. We've got Airspeed, the sport. But we've also got Alauda, the manufacturer, our sister company in South Australia, where we build these vehicles. Now, we don't want to build the vehicles forever. It's a stock series to start with, and the teams will inherit those vehicles. But over time, we're going to release more and more technology onto the teams to be able to iterate. And they should be the ones that are kind of beating the drum and the tempo of how quickly they want to take on the responsibilities of these vehicles in the air, the technological pathways of those vehicles, and the development so that they can start really getting used to aerial vehicles, vertical vehicles, and having their own pathways into personal air mobility as well. So it's starting as a stock series, but we're going to morph it into a formulaic series quite quickly.
That's really cool. So you could end up with a myriad. So you basically become Formula One. You set the regulations and, you know, what perhaps even, you know, cost caps and all that sort of thing. And then brands go off, OEMs go off and create and have different thrusters, different engine suppliers, all sorts of different components.
Yeah, we don't want to turn it into wacky races, no. But there's a formulaic control on what components of the vehicle we'll be releasing. And it's been really exciting talking to the teams we're talking to, because there's a general consensus on some of the technology areas that they are so keen to get involved with initially. Mm. And then there's some areas that they can see on their 5 and 10 year horizons that would be interesting. And that's kind of been built into our protocols. So when we're talking to these teams, we say, great, by year 3 and 4, you'll be responsible for X, and year 5 and 6, you'll be doing X and Y. And eventually, we see within the next 6 to 8 years that these teams will be largely responsible for everything minus core safety systems. Now, that's what Alauda, as an aerospace company, will be responsible for, is those safety systems, safety cells, and technologies that allow these vehicles to compete aggressively but safely.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's for teams to be able to test their technologies.
And when does this in the future enter the public narrative around mobility generally? So at the moment, you know, we're suddenly flying, pardon the pun, towards the use of electric vehicles. You know, I've got one, loads of my mates drive an electric car. You know, there's charging points popping up all over the place, huge ones. You know, Tesla are obviously doing really, really, really well in North America and Europe. At what point does the public suddenly start noticing that there are other alternatives which include flying around instead of driving around on roads?
It's always been, I guess flying cars has always been something that's meant to be 20 years away. We always thought, that's not in our lifetime. It's going to be in our lifetime. We're already starting to see it come through. There's big names like Joby, who've said they'll be entering commercial service for their flying taxis by 2025, starting with cities like California and Singapore and Dubai. Now, who's going to be flying these vehicles and how often is yet to be seen. My personal opinion is I think they're going to start replacing helicopters with effectively electric helicopters. But it's still a really exciting milestone to say just the next few years we're going to have these vehicles over our cities. So a lot of government, a lot of regulatory bodies are preparing at the moment to enable that to happen. There's a lot of development with vertiports. You'll see on many high-rise buildings in these progressive cities that there is electric charging being pushed to the top of these buildings, that vertiports are being placed and vertical corridors are starting to be carved out for a lot of new build structures. So it's happening in our lifetime. And it's the biggest mobility revolution that we do not know anything about.
Yeah.
And we've seen it with the car. So I keep coming back and I guess it's the history student in me. But we saw it at the turn of the car that in 18 years, Henry Ford produced his first car to selling his millionth vehicle. And the horse very quickly went out of business. And these mobility revolutions, when they do happen, they happen extraordinarily quickly. And they have seismic shifts. And I think we're probably about the precipice of having another one in the vertical space. But core components that are missing to it, on top of regulation, certification, battery technology, there's still a few things that need to change. The big one is public acceptance.
Yeah.
Getting the public to know about this, to want this, and we believe most importantly to fall in love with this, that's a big battle that's yet to be fought. And Airspeed is doing its part as a motorsport to be able to get people excited and ready for this.
Jack, we've kept you for nearly long enough, but we ask a final three questions to all of our guests. The first one for you is, what's got you excited at this very moment?
In the world of Airspeeder, it's our first manned flights. I've been on this journey for 4 years now. It's taken longer than I thought. Granted, there was a pandemic in between, but I'm ready. So we are at late stage testing on the vehicles. It looks like we're going to be Australia's first crewed eVTOL to be flown. We're only a matter of weeks away from that. So that for me is probably number one. Number two is excitedly revealing both our international locations and teams. For too long, it's been just Airspeeder Racing in Australia. So we're now about to announce where the new global locations will be for 2024 and which teams will be competing in the inaugural series of Airspeeder. So we're, they're the two things I can't wait to reveal.
Very good. How much of your success do you put down to luck and right place, right time? And how much do you put down to just downright hard work and graft?
Yeah, I loved this question. And the reason is because I used to believe in luck and believe in being lucky. But then I think it's a great ad. There's a Martini ad where I think the saying is luck is an attitude. And if you really kind of diagnose what luck is, it's a combination of the latter. It's a combination of the grafting, the positioning, the knowledge, the awareness of being in the right space at the right time. And I don't believe that luck is the biggest contributing factor. I think for me, success, it comes down to not giving up, not dying, and being around. And the longer you are around, the longer people hear your message. They understand that there's something going on here that you're worth listening to. The longer you're around, the greater the team has more experience it'll gather. And the greater increase, you'll greater increase your chance of success from all your previous learnings. And so whereas I used to believe in luck, I really don't believe it's a factor at all. It is about being a leatherback. It's about endurance. It's about grafting and keeping that flame, that burning passion that keeps you going and making sure that's got enough fuel is the thing that will get you across the line. So, luck is an attitude, as I say at Martini.
Very good. Now, final one for you. We'll let you get on your way. What are you scared of?
I guess the opposite of that would be failure. And it's something I'm terrified of. And I think I'm equal parts driven by wanting to succeed and not wanting to fail. And failure is, it's hard to define. It's very personal. It's something that is everyone's got their own view on what their own failure is. But look, I've said very openly that I'm here to build a brand new motorsport, a next generation motorsport, one that's going to rival Formula One in the coming years. Anything short of that, I will start to class as failure. So, that's probably my biggest fear.
Yeah, it's a very good motivator, isn't it? But Jack, it's been fascinating hearing from you. It's certainly opened my eyes to this new form of transportation that we should all be paying attention to, and you know, not just the OEMs, the big manufacturers, but you know, general public as well. So thank you so much for joining us on the show. I'm sure there's lots more to talk about in the future, so we'll get you back on again as things develop. But for now, thanks so much for joining us on the Motormouth podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.